The Gestalt Gardener podcast is brought to you by Varicosity Vein Center, providing health assessment screenings and compassionate care to improve your vascular functionality and quality of life. Our doctors and vein specialists offer solutions to painful varicose veins, spider veins, and other venous diseases to our patients. Now offering complimentary vein screenings in Jackson, Madison, and Ridgeland. Information and appointment scheduling at varicosityveincenter.com.
This is an MPB Think Radio podcast. To hear previous shows, visit mpbonline.org or download the MPB Public Radio app to listen on your iPhone or Android phone on demand.
Contractor ever tell you the price of something and it sounds so high you think, maybe I'll try it myself. Some jobs just aren't that difficult, and yes, you can do it. If you want to find out how to do those things, listen to Fix It 101, podcast everywhere.
Okie dokie, folks. Welcome back. Horticulturist Fel DeRushing. And for the next hour, we're just going to be talking about gardening. Anything related to gardening. Some people say, well, this is an insect. Well, insects are part of gardening. Potted plants, outdoor plants, lawn care, weed control, trees dying, tree planting, rose pruning, anything, planting potatoes, anything related to You and plants. I'm talking about home gardening, not commercial horticulture. We're going to talk about it. We've got lots and lots and lots of ground to cover. So it's your chance to really just yak with somebody who's used to be a horticulturist. Once a horticulturist, always a horticulturist, I guess. But I'm trying my best just to be a gardener now, just to relax about the rules. So give us a call, won't you? And we're going to say, good morning, Java. How are you today?
Man, I'm doing fine, fella.
Man, I just jumped right into it, didn't I?
I mean, hey, when it's time to go, it's time to go.
Well, I got this, my pineal gland is about the size of a grain of rice. You know about this thing?
I know about the pineal gland.
You know, it's little, but when we start seeing, you know, red birds out there and daffodils coming up and a couple of azaleas pop, and it stimulates the pineal gland, starts swelling up, and it starts pumping this hormone that gives us what's called spring fever. It's an actual physiological response to longer days, warmer days, flowers, fragrances. And so spring fever is better than coffee for getting the juices going.
Okay.
Anyway, good morning.
Well, yeah, good morning, man. Well, the temperature is springish, but the sun is nowhere to be found right now.
No, it's not. But, you know, which is fine because it means we don't have to, you know, worry about wearing a hat and all that. But anyway, we got a lot of stuff to talk about, but it's mostly about talking to people about what's going on in their garden. We're going to start out up in Lafayette County, up in Oxford. Good morning, Anna. How are you?
I'm just fine, and it is warm here.
Yes.
I'm jogging, and started stripping off.
it's okay as Oxford. You can't do that in Starkville, but I ain't going there.
Well, I just wanted to give you and your audience a heads up. The Master Gardeners are at it again, and we're doing the lecture series. And the first one is on March the 7th at noon at our library.
Yeah.
And it's going to be about landscape sustainability, and presented by Dr. Chris Cooper.
Yeah, good.
You may be familiar with him, right?
Yep.
Yeah, and so I'd like everybody to think about it, put it on your calendars. I will probably call you again to remind.
Okay, send me an email about it, too, because, you know, this is when I start coming up with a list and I start ticking stuff off. And be sure to send me a note about, you know, the whole series. That'd be good.
Great.
All right. Well, listen.
We've been trying to get everything else confirmed, but March the 7th is confirmed.
Sounds good. Well, keep your shirt on, lady.
I will. Bye.
See you. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Oh, you know, speaking of stuff, it's supposed to rain tomorrow, at least in central Mississippi. And there's a big native plant sale in Clinton Nature Center. Clinton Nature is a cool little place. I'm actually giving a lecture there next month. It's a cool little place, but they put together the most astounding list of trees, shrubs, vines, perennials, plants that grow well in Mississippi because they're from here, native plant sales. It's the Clinton Nature Center, and I'm going to take my truck down there, rain or shine, and load up with a couple of stuff.
The thing I like about the Clinton Nature Center, it's in the neighborhood.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So it's just like you could really kind of ride past it and miss it. But when you pull into that driveway and kind of go into it, it is a nice place.
It's a cool little place. Anyway, they're having their annual native plant sale. And there's other plant sales going on all over the place. I think there's one down at Crosby Arboretum today. I'm not sure. But Crosby Arboretum down in Picayune is it's probably our native plant gym. It's not a botanic garden. It's more of an arboretum. But anyway, it was walking trails. And if you go to Crosby Arboretum, just Google it and go to their website, they've got an astounding series of educational events and things for kids and all that. But anyway, if anybody knows of something that's going on that I can help promote, give us a call about it. We'll mention that I'm going to be at Hutto's Garden Center next Saturday. It's something I do every year. I don't get paid for. Well, they let me load up my truck with bark and mulch and compost. So you can say I work for dirt. But anyway, Saturday, February the when is it? The 17th. I'm going to be doing a program on home fruit plants that do well, yard plants that look good, that grow well, that also make stuff that you can eat. That's going to be on the 17th, Saturday morning. Always a big turnout, real, real laid back, real informal, is free. And then last thing I've got is on the 29th of this month, Leap Day. I'm going to be down at the Kiln, the library in Kiln, Mississippi, K-I-L-N, call the Kiln. So that's going to be on Thursday, February the 29th. So anyway, if you got some stuff I can help promote, give us a call. Or if you just want to yak about what's going on in your garden, we got the lines wide open, wide open. I know folks are thinking, should I prune my roses right now? What am I going to do with all these weeds in the lawn? Is this plant going to come back? You know, there's a lot of questions about gardening, and I bet that I experienced most of them in my own garden. So I got plenty of stuff I can share with you about what I would do, what I would get my mother to do if she were still around, what I get my son and my daughter to do. Here's how I would do it without a bunch of bells and whistles. So anyway, I actually got out garden this week, Java, and so a neighbor walked by and saw me.
And I know that was a treat because they was like, I don't know, is he here? Is he not here?
Yeah, I told him. I said, please don't tell anybody he saw me. I mean, my fingernails were nasty. I got a pair of jeans that are so nasty, Java. I don't even wash them. I just take them off, and I'm going out in the garden. I put those back on, and I got a pair of gardening shoes that are good and sturdy, but they've been torn up so long that I have duct tape around them to keep the bottom on it. I mean, so.
Well, let me. It's funny you said that. I saw like Mr. T. It's some Instagram post or social media post where he talked about his shoes and with the tape on them, you know.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if it's a joke or if it's a cliche or not, but duct tape works. I mean, these are really good. They were expensive when I got them years and years ago, and they've lasted a long, and they're good for digging. And, you know, they're just sturdy shoes, not pretty shoes, but the bottom's sort of flapping. So I put duct tape around it, and I'm thinking, sometimes I forget what I'm doing. I run to the store, and I got muddy knees and duct tape on my shoes and this scraggly long hair.
Well, as long as it works for you, that's all that's all that matters.
It does. Some of the things I planted this week, and I've got a lot of stuff out there still. My kale, my colorful kales, the purple kale, the lacinata, the blue kale, they're looking so good. And the violas and pansies, my parsley is looking real. And I grow these as ornamental plants that I can eat. But this past week, I worked up a little small row in a small raised bed I've got. It's real easy because raised beds are easy to dig. And I planted some onion sets. I went to the garden center and I bought a sack of these little small onions. They're about the size of a marble, I guess. And I just put them out there, spread them out, got them the spacing I want, pushed them about two-thirds of the way in with the top sticking out. And so I got me some onions planted. I've already got some English peas. Not the edible kind, but the kind that you actually, you know, open up and eat. They're so sweet and all. But I got some of those pre-sprouting. I put the peas, the seeds, roll them up in a damp piece of paper towel and put it in a big plastic bag. And within 2 or 3 days, they sprouted. You know, they just, you know, they got little tiny roots coming out. And so then I just go out and I just poke them in little holes I put so I don't have to worry about which one's going to come up, which ones aren't. I pre-sprout them. takes 2 or 3 days, but it sure is easy. And then the last thing is I've got some taters. Java, every year I'm always talking about this chitin me taters.
You brought that in this morning.
And nobody knew what it was.
And I was like, that's some kind of rotted something.
It looks bad. But what I did was I just cut up an Irish potato up into pieces and let them heal over. Let's just let them dry. It looks really scuzzy. Looks terrible, all scuzzy, but it's hard. And you just cut them. You let them heal over. They get kind of gray and looking. But then these little eyes start sprouting out. You can already see the little roots coming out. They're, you know, not much bigger than my fingernail. But I pre-sprouted the potatoes, so I can go out and put them in the ground. That's what I'm going to do. I've got some dirt worked up. I'm going to put them in the ground a little bit, you know, not too deep, and I'm going to barely cover them up. And then when they do sprout, as the plants sprout, I'm going to pile a little dirt at first and then leaves and mulch on top so that the plants growing up through leaves or through something else. And every time the leaves poke through the top, I pile some more stuff on it till I got about a foot or so of stuff on top of the original piece, because the potatoes will grow on the stems of the plant growing in the mulch. So pre-sprout them, plant them, and when they start growing, I cover them up. And when they show a little green, I cover them up. I repeat that for a foot. And I'm going to have a nice little thing of Irish peas and taters and onions.
Now, see, there's a song. Oh, if I would have known you were going to, I could have pulled it out.
It's a really bad one. It's a really, Jesus, I forget what it is, taters and potatoes and my peas. But also, they've got going to plant some lettuces and things like that. People are waiting till spring, Java. They say, oh, I saw a flower. It reminds you spring's on its way. Forget spring. How about right now? Right now, you can have a pot full of stuff on your patio or your porch with lettuce and kale and daffodils. You can have a good garden in February and let spring take care of itself. I'm getting philosophical here, aren't I?
Maybe break time.
Okay. Well, I will say this. Wordsworth wrote not one Wordsworth. Who was it? Sonny Hammerick. I can't remember the guy's name. Something Hemick or Hemery. Anyway, he wrote a song. He wrote a poem, and among it says, "Gather ye rosebuds while ye may. The old time is a flying. Those flowers that are blooming today, tomorrow will be a dying." So enjoy. It's not hedonistic to enjoy your garden even in February. If you're not enjoying it in February, there's something wrong. And we can look around and find stuff that are doing well in February in your town, in your neck of the woods, and then plant that later this year. So this time next year, you ain't got time to worry about springtime. We're going to enjoy every month that comes along. Slide over to Shaco, Mississippi. Ron, how you doing this morning?
Pretty good, Tyler. How you doing?
So far, so good. Excited.
Oh, great.
What's up?
Good. I was wondering about sweet potatoes. Can you do them like you do regular potatoes?
Well, they're a little bit different. Regular potatoes, you know, of course, they grow for a tuber just like sweet potatoes. But regular potatoes, when you plant them, the plant grows up and you have to pile stuff up on the stem because potatoes will only grow in the dark. Sweet potatoes, you just plant them, you know, in some pretty good dirt. Doesn't have to be really good. Not a lot of fertilizer because it makes its own. And just plant them where they can run and spread and fill up in there because this is a pretty vigorous vine. And it takes about 4 months, I guess, for sweet potatoes to make. And so we wait till it gets really warm to plant those. And you just, what you could do, you could start your own by taking a sweet potato and just put it in a pot with maybe some potting soil or sandy soil or something and water in it. And when they sprout out, you could take those sprouts and break them off and just stick them right in the ground and they'll root themselves. So it's a vine is what I'm saying, and it needs warm weather.
Thank you.
Have you done it before? You grown sweet potatoes just in general?
Yeah, in a garden. I wanted to plant some in like a laundry hammock thing.
Yeah, you could probably do that. That would be interesting to do, but just keep in mind that sweet potatoes, they take a little bit longer, and because they make really a lot of vine, you're going to need to water it, you know, a little bit more often than if it was just a tomato or something in that same thing. But, yeah, there wouldn't be any problem at all doing that.
Okay. I appreciate it.
Okay, thanks for your call, Ron.
You bet.
I came across a poem. I'm going to share it in just a little while that I think is kind of interesting. Most people won't recognize it, but I've got so many things that can be done this time of year. One of the things that I'm starting to see people get concerned about are weeds in the lawn. There's one in particular. You know, we know about dandelions, you know, and they come up everywhere. If either you like them or you don't, that's what it boils down to. But if you don't like them because somebody told you weren't supposed to like them, you know, that's propaganda. I'm going to go ahead and say that. There's nothing wrong with a few dandelions and henbit and wild violets and oxalis and clover. There's nothing wrong with that. That's what we did for centuries before the 1950s and 60s when they started coming out with chemical herbicides. I'm just going to go ahead and say that. And it became a thing where in order to sell the products, they had to come up with a villain. So they started telling these weeds are the enemy. You've got to have a perfect lawn. If you don't have a perfect lawn, there's something wrong with you. You're a bad neighbor. And the truth is that was a marketing scheme and it worked. And now people think if you don't have a perfect lawn, there's something wrong with you. And the truth is it's not as fun.
And Felder, it's funny that you said it because interacting with you and I guess being on this show, I have come to appreciate a meadow lawn, because I was from, you know, television and other things like it got to be manicured and it's not is this blade of grass taller than the other blade of grass? But now that I have, you know, come under your understanding, a meadow lawn is a beautiful lawn.
You know, at the same time, I'm a turf guy. I studied turf management at Mississippi State. I studied turf management at the Scotts Lawn Institute in Ohio. I work with golf course. I appreciate a nice little controlled, little perfect little patch of clean, smooth, in the summertime is brown, in the wintertime is green, a lawn. But you don't have to have that. And you can actually have a little throw rug of a perfect lawn. But right now, we're seeing a lot of henbit. Henbit is coming up like crazy. It's sometimes 6-8 inches tall right now. It's a green plant. It's got little tiny purple furry flowers. If you look at it up close, I guarantee you'll fall in love with it because they look like little purple furry orchids. And it is one of the best wintertime pollinator plants. And get this, it's not fragrant, but it is a member of the mint family, and you can eat it. So it's good for pollinators. You can eat it when you're tired of looking at it. But more important, when it's time to mow your grass in late March or April, you just cut it down and it's gone. It doesn't hurt anything. So anyway, henbit and dandelions and violets, they're starting to bloom now. And they're loaded with pollinators that ain't got nothing else out there. So anyway, just more around a patch of them.
Now, Felder, we got Larry Joe from Taylorsville on the line. But before we go to Larry Joe, I got to let everybody know that this episode's podcast is going to be brought to you by Vercosity Vein Center. And for more information about the Vercosity Vein Center, visit VercosityVeinCenter.com. We appreciate our underwriter and sponsor.
That's right. We do appreciate that. Hey, now I've got I've got an answer to question that nobody's asking. But let's go to Taylorsville and see what's going on with Larry Joe. Good morning, sir.
Yes, I have a question about tree roots.
Mm-hmm.
I have a small raised bed garden's about 15 by 12, and it's been invaded by these tree roots.
Oh, yeah.
Had a couple of oak trees nearby, a large pine tree across the driveway. It looks like tree roots have come underneath the driveway to these, attracted by the good dirt in the garden.
Yeah. So
How deep would you have to trench around it and maybe pour like a trencher, one of these chain trenchers, and then pour concrete in there with like 2 feet be enough?
Oh,
or
you
three?
You don't have to go near that much trouble. And let me, a little background for other folks. Tree roots don't grow towards anything. What happens is one molecule, one cell at a time, they grow towards where they get air and water. And if they're in pretty good dirt, they get a little air, get a little water. They'll only grow towards good conditions. And up under your driveway is really not great, but they'll make their way under there. Usually the tree roots are going to be within the top. You've seen trees blown over. The roots are real shallow. Usually they're going to be the top foot or so, foot and a half or so of the soil, because it's not enough air air down deeper. It stays too wet, so they're gonna stay shallow, and then grow anywhere where they can get air and water. So you can cut a trench just 6 inches, 8 inches, a foot deep between you and the tree, and everything on your side of it is going to die, and it can't come back from the tree side because it's not going to go down and up under and come back under a trench. So if you make a little trench, not even that deep, maybe 4, 5, 6 inches deep around your garden, and then every couple of years go in there and take a shovel and just cut straight down in the center of that trench, maybe a shovel deep, that'll cut any roots that are growing under it. So once you get a trench started, all you got to do is just go to every couple of years and just slice down in the middle of that trench, cut anything that's making it up under it.
Well, that's a good news.
Yeah.
Go that deep.
Yeah, I give you.
I question where 6 inches is going to be enough. I tell you what,
No need to put any kind of bearing in there. Yeah, but here's the hint. Here's the feller hint. This is not horticulture. This is just gardening. Get you a flat bladed file, and sharpen your shovel. Just like shaving. If you've ever shaved and halfway through you realize this razor ain't any good and you put it down, you grab a new razor and you almost kill yourself, it's so quick. If you'll put a sharp edge on a shovel, with a grinder or a flat-edged thing, I mean, it just it's actually a good feel. It makes a nice little crunchy sound when you crunch down through roots. It makes it so much easier.
Right. I have a little trenching shovel a narrow trenching shovel.
That's good for keeping the trench clear, you know. But right. But at least every couple of years or so, you need to take a regular shovel in the center of that trench and cut straight down, you know, 6-8 inches, and it won't take you long to figure out how deep. And that's all it takes.
Thank you so very much. That's good news.
Okay, appreciate it, man. Thanks for calling, Larry.
Bye bye,
Larry Joe from Taylorsville. Let's light up to Oxford again, Jesse. What's going on? Good morning.
Well, hold on, Felder. We just had okay. Here's Jesse. Yeah, all right.
It's the coffee and the pineal gland.
It's got you going.
Yeah, yeah. Wait till the antihistamines come in. What's up, Jesse?
Hey, I have a question. I have 3 pecan trees in my front yard. But the pecans never get bigger than, say, a dime or so, and then then they fall and all that. Is there anything I could do to make the pecans actually grow bigger?
But they fall off before they get ripe, right?
Correct.
Yeah. Yeah. This is in fruit science, they call this June drop. If a fruit, whether it's a pecan or an apple or a pear or whatever, if it doesn't get pollinated quite right, it'll start to form, but if the seed inside isn't able to mature because it didn't get good pollen or because it, you know, or anything like that, if it's not going to be a good, the tree just throws them off. It aborts them. You know, so this is usually because of not very good pollination, enough to get them started, but not enough to make the seed inside the pecan, the nut itself, mature. So June drop is usually caused by pollination problems. And if they're staying small when they mature, that's just a variety. But sounds like that the tree's just either under a little stress, stays too wet in the winter or something like that. More likely just not getting. I bet you planted all the same variety, and a pecan tree will pollinate itself, but not very well. So usually commercial growers alternate rows of different varieties for better, fuller pollination and nuts. Anyway, not much you can do except fertilize it every 3 or 4 years and just see what happens. Seriously.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Okay, yeah. And by the way, I was raised in Pecan Grove, and I would never recommend a pecan for people's yards because they just have problems. But if you do make them, they're worth it. So anyway, good luck on it, Jesse.
Thank you.
So there, I came across a little negative on that. I love pecans. Have got a pound of shell raw pecan meat, 3,500 calories per pound. yeah, that's oily.
And I can say one of the best things about a pecan tree is, well, maybe I shouldn't say this.
Go ahead. Go for it. Come on, Felder. Just say it. Don't think.
They often are looked at as community trees. I don't know. I don't care where. Especially if it's on the edge of somebody's property close to the street.
Hell yeah.
I mean, you can see people with their plastic bags just sacking them up.
The proper term are urban foragers.
I see. And if you will tell people they are foragers, they'd be like, don't look at me. I'm not a forager. Yeah. Or, you know, what is a forager?
Yeah, you're going out looking for food, picking up food up off the ground.
And they have a bag of pecans that they picked up off the street from on the kitchen table.
Yeah, I was raised in a small pecan grove up in the Delta. My great grandmother was a horticulturist. We lived across the street. When I was 10 years old, Java, this is a woman born in the 1880s. When I was 10 years old, she called me Little Professor because I was always asking. I helped her with her daffodils and all that. But we used to pick up pecans, and I was paid a nickel a pound. And I can tell you, 60 to 65 pecans to a pound, and I would make a nickel. But, you know, you can get in the movie for 10 cents back then. That's a long time ago. 25 cents, okay. You know, I had to pick up 5 pounds of pecans to go to the Saturday matinee. And I want to talk about rooting roses, but first let's go down to Mobile and talk with Mikey. Good morning, Mikey. How are you?
Hey, good morning. This is reviving me. My pineal gland is coming alert.
There you go. Calm down.
It was happening anyway, like you said.
Yeah, what you got going on?
Kind of a little, I'm taking all of your, because you reminded me of some important things about seeds to start, but I'm questioning myself, because I figure you know a lot more about it, that's why I'm questioning you. Hollies that are near a street, I've kept them pruned back on the street side.
Yeah.
And I deliberately let the long, tall tops grow for several feet, because I found that it was kind of interesting, and I've done it only with one piece, to bend them over to make arches.
Yeah.
And that's been, it's fun. It's kind of just fun to look at. It's also protective against neighbors who might be backing out of their driveway and into my yard. I have some more now that are ready to be bent. And is this a bad time to move? That's the big question. To do that.
To do what?
Should I wait until it's warmer to bend them over? And the other question is, should I trim off any of the side branches?
Okay. First of all, you're talking about making an arch out of a woody plant. You can do that with trees, with crepe myrtles, or roses, whatever. But no, you can do that anytime. Go ahead and make your arch. And by the way, you can firm the arch up by going to one of the big box stores and get you a long, skinny piece of rebar and bending it into the arch and put it over there and then just tie the branches to that. And that'll make it firm. And then it's just a matter of cutting off whatever's growing in the direction you don't want. It's almost like, it's like an espalier. If a branch is growing down and you don't want it, just pluck out the ones that are growing that you don't want and leave the ones you do. But, no, if you're going to do an arch, it's easier, and sturdier to get you a long piece of skinny rebar and make the arch like that and just tie the stuff to that.
Well, fortunately, these are sturdy enough that they're holding each other up.
Okay.
And they're far enough away from, you know, the street area.
Yeah, no problem.
Let me give a tip here. I found that the easiest way is to take a garden stake, you know, a shepherd's crook style stake, and bend it over first and maybe let it get a little used to that.
Yeah, sort of like taking a piece of rebar and doing it.
Right, right. And then tie it off with the plastic, what do they call them, the things that they do electrical work with.
Yeah, or just the ties that come with your bread. But anyway, that's a great idea. That's a great idea. And it's just a matter of just cutting off what's grabbing your hair. If it's not, and you know, it's called directional pruning. You know, leave what you want, grow in the direction you want, cut off other stuff. That's all it is. But anyway, great tip there, Mikey. Appreciate it.
Yeah, appreciate it so much. Bye.
All righty. See ya. I have found if you're going to do an arch, there's a couple of things, especially with climbing roses. Everybody wants a rose arch. And I've seen countless well-done rose arches, but I've seen a lot that are poorly done. And the reason they're done poorly is because people think that's all I need to do. No, you need to make it at least 2 or 3 feet higher than you think is right. If you think it's too high, then that's about right.
Now, maybe I've missed it, but we're talking about like a actual arch like that goes over a pathway?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and, you know, we see those, you know, a lot of times people, you know, like in a little arbor, you walk through it and then you grow a vine over it. But people always do it like 8 feet or so high, and when they grow the plant on it, the plant grows down and it grabs your hair and
okay,
your hat
yes,
and all like
yes.
that. So a good rose arch is going to be at least – I'm going to say 9 or 10 feet tall. And that seems to, when you're doing it, you think of this is ridiculous. Nope, it's just about right because it's going to fill in the two. So always make it bigger. And that really skinny rebar is the easiest, very inexpensive. You can bend it to the shape you want and tie it to stakes, whatever you want to do. But that's a good way to get it started. And if you're going to grow something like a climbing rose or any kind of vine, wisteria, whatever, if it's going to take a long time to grow, go ahead and plant it. And then the first year, plant you something else like gourds or a cypress vine or a moonflower. You know, plant some kind of fast-growing annual vine to cover it the first year while your permanent vine sort of gets its roots started, starts growing and all. In other words, you know, go ahead and do something with an annual vine to take up the space to create the arch till your other plant gets big enough to do it itself. So pretty straightforward. I want to remind folks that Clinton Nature Center has a plant sale, native plant sale, on Saturday morning. I'm going to be there, rain or shine. Well, it ain't going to be any shine, rain or not, I'll say. And also going to be at Hutto's Garden Center in Jackson, Ellis Avenue in Jackson, on next Saturday, the 17th. This is our annual home fruit seminar. It's always a lot of people there. I cover all the different types of fruits and then the best varieties of each type, because that makes a big difference. Just planting a fruit tree doesn't mean you're going to get fruit. You can plant peaches all the time, but if it's a peach that doesn't need much cold weather, you live on the coast, that's perfect. Live up north, it's going to bloom too early. If it's a plant that needs long chilling hours in the winter, it never will bloom. So you need to choose the right variety for each part of your state. Now, if you're not sure about this, two things. I've got a little free publication I send out. It's an email thing. If you'll go to failtorushing.blog, it has a little thing that says email me. I'll send you my little brochure printable on home fruits for Mississippi, Louisiana, Alabama, Arkansas, whatever. Or you could go to MSUcares.com. That's the Mississippi State University Extension Service website. And in the search box, which comes right up at the top, just type in fruit varieties. And it has the best types of fruit and the best varieties for each part of the state. Each part of the state. It makes a big difference.
Now, Felder, we got a couple calls lining up. I think they're going to hold us to the end of the show. But I just want to remind everyone that this episode's podcast is brought to you by the Varicosity Vein Center. So for more information about our wonderful sponsor, the Varicosity Vein Center, visit varicosityveincenter.com.
We do appreciate that. And we've got, I don't know if we're going to get time to talk about rooting roses, but I had a fantastic time with the Old Garden Rose Society people, real gardeners, not stuffy rose people, real gardeners at the Greenwood Cemetery at Jackson. There was maybe 40 people, 35, 40 people there pruning and fertilizing and mulching. But I took some cuttings and I rooted them. And I just wanted to show Java. I actually have some, and I don't know if you can see, but they're actually sprouting out already.
And I will let you know that Crystal took some cuttings from her grandmother's house, and she's so excited because they started to roots, started sprouting some roots and stuff. And
well, this is the time of year to do it.
Yeah.
You know, this is the time of year to prune your roses, except for climbers. Climbing roses are spring bloomers. Prune your shrub roses, but leave the climbers alone until after they finish blooming. That's just a real big caveat. Now, let's go to, I guess, Jesse in Oxford. Jesse, good morning.
Hey, it's me again. I had another question for you. It's for the cattle panel trellises that you have for your garden.
Yeah.
And are they, I've been told that they're good for squash and cucumbers and also tomatoes. Is that good for those? Those type of plants and all that for my garden?
Well, any, you know, the vine type plants, it went up off the ground. The only reason we put trellis and cucumbers on trellises is because to keep them up off the ground. But you don't need a cattle panel for those things. You could just use a little short piece of dog fencing or something. But the cattle panels are really good for any kind of vine stuff. They're sturdy. They're easy to clean off, and you can move them to a different part of the garden every year, so you're not planting the same stuff in the same place. So I wouldn't make them permanent. I'd make them where you could, you know, maybe have some posts where you could move it to a different part of the garden every year, rather than plant the same stuff over and over and over in the same spot. But I use them.
Are they also good for tomatoes?
A stick is good for anything that'll hold it up off the ground. So, yeah, it's just the thing is, put a pencil to it and see how much a cattle panel costs versus how much tomatoes would cost. See, anyway, no, they're fine. Anything that'll hold these plants up off the ground, a cattle panel is easy, is sturdy, is doable, and you can move it around, and it'll last for years and years and years.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, appreciate it. Okay, let's go down to Jackson, talk with Hibbett. Hibbett, how are you this morning?
Morning, Felder.
Howdy.
I wanted to start some vegetables from seeds, and is it a good time? And any tips, any thoughts you might have for that?
It is a good time. I'm going to wait just a little bit on summer stuff like tomatoes and peppers. And, you know, I grow a lot of unusual and heirloom peppers. I'm not very good at tomatoes, but those kind of plants that you set out as transplants, it takes a month and 5 weeks or so to get a good little plant to set out. And we don't want to plant stuff in central Mississippi for summer until at least the 1st of April. We got to wait till the soil warms up. Everybody's saying, oh, it feels really good out there. Well, the rains and the dirt are still cold until about April. So, you know, if you wait, you know, start in the middle of February, latter part of February to start them, then they'll be right just in time to set them out in April. One thing I will mention, Hibbett, a lot of people start seeds indoors in little trays and packs and stuff like that. If you can do that, sow them and then cover the containers up with like some plastic food wrap to keep the humidity and warmth in. And just as soon as these seeds sprout, get rid of the plastic. And every single day it's going to be above 50. Put them out in the real sunshine. Real sunshine, slightly cool temperatures, wind, the humidity. These will make the plant sturdy and stocky. But if you keep them indoors, they get long and leggy and floppy. So get them started, little plastic food wrap, and then as soon as they sprout, put them out in real sunshine, only bring them in if it's going to get cold.
Great advice. Thanks, Felder.
Okay, appreciate it, Thibbett. Thanks for calling. Okay, Abram, welcome.
Thanks so much.
Java had to scoot he's a big boss now.
Yeah, we have the, we're doing live radio right now is what it is.
from down at the Trademark, right?
Yeah. He's going down to the rodeo.
Okay.
Yeah.
Java at the rodeo.
Java at the rodeo. He wasn't quite dressed for the rodeo, if you notice.
Yeah, but Java, you know, Java has that R about him. You know, he's Java.
Oh, yeah.
That's all right. I got a choice of two calls. I'm not sure which. I don't know where they go with the blue or the orange.
I believe it's the orange on your screen. Gene in Poplarville.
Okay, go down to Poplarville. Hey, Gene, good morning.
Hi, I'm glad to talk to you.
Thank you.
Love the show. I moved from the Gulf Coast to Poplarville, and I picked the property because of two lovely live oaks.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess about right before the freeze, they started losing their leaves, and I noticed that, that's a little early, but I didn't think anything of it. The other oak trees along the road are not losing theirs.
Yeah.
And so now it's almost all the way to the top. There's only two leaves left at the top, and I've asked the county extension office and so forth, and I was told to put lime and fertilizer. And I did that, and it's not any better. course, it can't be, I guess, because of the season. But
yeah.
What do you suggest and what's happening?
Well, first of all, I helped teach the tree care course, arboriculture course at Mississippi State over 40 years ago. And I've been working with trees ever since. And I know for sure that there ain't squat you can do right now. There's nothing you can do. Anybody tells you different, they're just giving you something to keep you busy. A little fertilizer helps, not necessarily this time of year. Little lime if your soil is acid, but you know, live oaks grow fine on the coast without. They're native to the coast. They don't care. Mm-hmm. So all you can, and there's a lot. We've lost pine trees, thousands of pine trees, and even magnolia trees. And I lost a Dana Vioppon holly, which are unkillable plants because of the past year and a half of bad weather. And some of mine are just dead. The only thing I can do is wait and see if they sprout back out in the spring. And if they do, cool. And if they don't, well, that's a different story. There's nothing we can do seriously to help these trees except wait and see. And the chances are good they're going to be fine. Live oaks drop their last year's leaves just like any other tree, but it's usually hidden because it got new leaves on the ends of the branches. And it could just be that it was weakened last year and the new leaves aren't very strong. So let's see how it does this spring.
If they come out again this spring, prune them. Is that what you said?
No. I'm just saying, just wait and see. You know, I mean, you can prune a tree or shrub anytime you want to, but let's just wait and see. In other words, I'm not trying to just put you off or say, I don't know. I'm saying, I do know there's nothing you can do. Let's just wait and see. And if they leaf out, everything's fine. If they don't, then you have to decide whether you want to cut out dead stuff or leave it for the squirrels to live in and stuff like that. But there's nothing you can do right now, and you're not alone in this. I bet they'll sprout back out just fine, but it'll be middle of April, 1st of May. Look at them from across the street sometime in May. And if they don't have new growth at the top of them by then, you got a problem. I bet they sprout out.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Okay, good luck on it. Well, do we have Michael in Waveland?
Hi, how you doing?
I'm doing fine. What's going on?
Well, I have Bradford pear trees that I lined the driveway about 8 years ago. One of them started to die off, and on the others, I'm starting to see little green nubs developing, fuzzy nubs. And I was wondering if that was some kind of fungus or whatever, and is there any way I could spray the tree with something?
Well, first of all, let's think what the nubs could be. If it's kind of a gray, frilly-looking stuff, kind of ferny, frilly, gray, scaly-looking stuff, those are called lichens, L-I-C-H-E-E-N-S. Lichens grow on trees and shrubs and older plants that are slow growing or weak or in decline. They also grow on rocks and tombstones and iron bridge railings and even on a bottle on my glass bottle tree. So the lichens are not causing a problem. There's no need to spray for those. They're the symptom that tree is struggling. And a healthy tree will have them, but it'll shed them before rather than they get real crusty. So lichen's not a problem. They're a symptom. So keep in mind that anytime you plant a long row of anything, whether it's Bradford pears or azaleas or anything, some are going to do better than others. Some are going to do really, really poorly. And that's what happens when you plant trees and shrubs in a row. Some are going to do better than others. It's a design problem. So not much you can do about that. All you can do really to help these trees, unless you want to prune them, you can prune them back and they'll sprout out really good, but they're not going to be uniform. They're going to be all, you know, some are going to be different shape. If you cut them back, it'll stimulate some strong new growth and they'll come out really fine. You can do that, no problem. Other than that, about all you can do is give them a little bit of fertilizer and spray. Fertilize the grass under them every 2 or 3 or 4 years. That's more than enough for the trees, too. And just hope that they don't have real bad root issues. But it's not unusual to have one or two plants in a row do poorly or better than the others. And so not much you can do but fertilize in the spring.
Yeah, I have them planted about 10 feet apart.
Yeah.
Because they grow up like a teardrop or something.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Well,
so
but
I gave them enough room, I thought.
Yeah, well, you know, but you know, you're talking about above the ground, they can still have root problems. But again, keep in mind, we've had some really bad weather that has killed even some native trees. And so it's not unusual to – it would be unexpected to have non-native trees like the Bradford-type pears and things like that doing poorly too. Not much we can do except a little bit of fertilizer in the spring, late March or April, a good soaking every month or so during the summer if we go without rain. Other than that, there's not much we can do. But there's no need to spray for those lichens is what I'm saying. They're the symptom that the trees need a little invigorating. With maybe fertilizer and water. That's all we can do. And if they do, if it does go ahead and die, think about slowly replacing them with a sturdier tree. You don't have to have identical trees in a long row. That's a design thing. It's not set in stone. You can have different plants in an alley. What you have is called an alley, a long row or double row of trees. So anyway, you can also prune them, and they'll stimulate some new growth, but they're just not going to be. And it can be symmetrical anymore. But no need to spray for the lichens is what I'm saying. They're telling you the tree's struggling.
Permission. I'm glad I was able to get through today.
Yeah, okay. Well, good luck. And by the way, I think lichens are kind of pretty, but, you know, I even had them growing on a glass bottle on one of my bottle trees. That'll tell you how dear. But when we see them on a plant and they're really thick and crusty, they're saying the plant's weak. It's not growing very well. A little fertilizer in the spring. Let's see what happens.
Would you recommend another tree type that I could replace it with?
Yeah, there's a lot of good choices. I mean, you could go with cypress trees. You could go with native Yaupon hollies. You could go with Grancy Graybeard. There's a lot of really good choices, But if you want to shoot me an email, go to felderrushing.blog. Click on email me, and we can get more detail then. So anyway, appreciate your call. We got a scoop. I got taters to plant. I got some pea seeds that are sprouting. I'm gonna need to work up some dirt before the rain, and I just gotta get out. My pineal gland is making me go crazy. I got spring fever. I gotta do something. Rooting roses, I got that done. Planting taters, gonna do that this weekend. Set out some. Nah, that's enough. I'm gonna go out and just relax. Have me another cup of coffee. I'm gonna calm down, and I'm gonna do what I do best, and that's do my best to show other people how to get dirty. Get dirty. See y'all next week.
This is an MPB Think Radio podcast. To hear previous shows, visit mpbonline.org or download the MPB Public Radio app to listen on your iPhone or Android phone on demand.